All right, we are live. Welcome to Elevate Today podcast. You are here with Bobby Bluford. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Yes, you are someone that was literally came on here because someone else suggested you to. He said, there's not another man I couldn't think of that's more better than this man that's inspired me in so many ways. Last podcast I was with Aquarius Wave and he just said I should get you on. And that's how you're on.
So awesome. Yeah, Aquarius and I go back a ways and he too mentioned that you and I must connect. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
And then this morning I was talking to my coach. We were working on boxing and you are someone that deeply inspired him. And that blows my mind from like high school days, from football
his
training.
His high school days.
Right, yes. Right. Yeah, so how did you get into all of this and what made you get into football and then coaching football right. And now what you're doing now?
So my journey has been circuitous.
Circuitous.
Right word. Weavy. Mm-hmm. And I know now, I believe now, I understand now that all of it was planned, right? And all of it was by design. So I played football at UC Davis in the late 90s, early 90s. Then my dream at the time was to play professionally. So that was my first vision, my first dream, my first goal. Like most dreams, they either get cut short or you meet those dreams to fruition, right? So that dream was cut short by just me not being good enough. No injuries, no, thank God. Mm-hmm. God just didn't have that plan for me. So after that, I still wanted to be involved in sports. Like I still had this vision of being in football in particular, but being involved in sports. So I started a company that we started at the height of the dot-com boom. For those viewers watching this, that was the mid to late 90s when startup companies were the thing, where mm-hmm. any idea that involved technology, involved the internet, was being funded at outrageous levels. So we, you know, I was kind of a nerd. You know, I grew up, you know, I was a computer science major at UC Davis initially. I changed the business, but I always had this nerdy side to me. So I gravitated toward the technology connection with sports. So I wanted to start a company that did like what many are doing now, connecting colleges to athletes, online databases, recruiting profiles. So our company, Next Level, was the first company to do that, or one of the first.
Wow.
To do that back in 1997, 98. For some reason, I was reluctant for the company to be a training company or like coaching company in terms of like physical coaching, but it just kind of morphed into doing that as well. So we began a partnership with the Northern California Volleyball Association. I began getting contacted by schools in the Bay Area to train their teams. So almost reluctantly, I began to just train teams.
Wow.
And that's how I met Coach Chris. I trained Live Oak, I trained Oak Grove, I trained, you know, again, a lot of volleyball programs. So I began to kind of morph into doing more of the physical coaching, the physical training, as kind of an accident. But as I said before, you know, these things are pre-designed, I believe. So I was meant to do that because I needed to understand how to coach people. I needed to get reps in terms of instructing and leading and storytelling and motivating. And it turns out there was no better way for me to do that than to be immersed into coaching. So that's how far back it goes. That's kind of where, you know, my journey started. We'll get into like the other avenues that got me here. But yeah, that's how me and Coach Chris met, Coach Chris Murphy.
Yeah.
And that was literally 20 years, 20 plus years ago.
Mm-hmm. When it started. And this was through your company, your startup.
That was through the company I started, mm-hmm. Called Next Level. And eventually it became just me doing it. But yeah, it was through Next Level, my company, but I was the trainer. I was the physical trainer of the company. So mm-hmm. it was basically Coach Bobby before there was an official Coach Bobby.
Wow. And when it came to like working with these kids, the whole point was for you to recruit them to colleges. That's what you were looking for as their coach or like as
well,
their trainer?
Well, so the business concept was to, so I went to UC Davis mm-hmm. and UC Davis at that time was transitioning into Division I sports. So the transition period, which was from 94 until about 99, we were competing against scholarship schools, right? Many, our whole conference beginning in 94 was scholarship programs. So Sac State, Cal State Northridge, Cal Poly, Southern Utah, these are all scholarship programs. So I understood at that early age that the difference between a Division II athlete and a 1AA, which is now FCS athlete, is not that great. And oftentimes it's just the right teacher here, the right coach there, the right class here, the right exposure there. So I began the company because I wanted people, kids like me, to understand the options available to them. Mm-hmm. I never meant for it to be a training company. I knew that was part of it. So we had the three E's. It was education, exposure, and because E has to be, had to have some cool acronym or some cool 1, 2, 3 bullet points. So the last E was athletic efficiency, meaning mm-hmm. that whatever your height, weight, speed was, it was about maximizing your ability. So it was exposure, education, and athletic efficiency. An idea was basically to get all those three prongs and overlay it with any athlete and allow that athlete to maximize his or her potential at whatever level that was. So D3, D2, 1AA, or Division I. And most kids who are not, especially back then before the internet was a big thing, you know, remember this is, you know, late 90s when the internet was still new. Mm-hmm. So most young athletes had no idea of the opportunities out there. They knew of all the big schools. So if you're in California, you knew of UCLA, Arizona, Stanford, Cal, but you had no idea about Mississippi Valley State or HBCUs or Ivy League programs. So the idea was to help student athletes understand, number one, that they were out there, all these schools, opportunities. But number two, if you maximize your ability as an athlete, no matter how high, how tall, how big, how fast or strong you were, there was a place for you. So the idea was to raise money and have it be mostly a technology company, but it just so happened that because people were so into the physical part that I ended up doing more training and coaching mm-hmm. Physically than I had planned to.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it all kind of like stacked up to be what you're doing now, because I'm sure
yeah.
through training the kids, you realize that a lot of it is their mental that needed a lot of work to actually show up to practice.
It's crazy because, you know, so I'll get into a little bit how, so that was literally, you know, that was between 1998, 97 time frame when I had my first clients as a trainer. I don't use the word trainer, by the way. I use the word coach, always have, because anybody can train. And what makes the training effective is having a young person or old person that is mentally, spiritually, and emotionally available for the workout, right? So yeah. I could give you a burpee. I can give you a jiu-jitsu workout. I can give you a weight room workout. But if you are not emotionally, spiritually, and psychologically into the workout, it won't work. So I've always known that from being an athlete, from being around other athletes who weren't always, or actually were almost never all three levels present, mm-hmm. emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. And having seen that and knowing kind of what where I was, I was never the biggest, fastest, strongest. Never. I was never as you know, physically imposing as my even my son is. But no one on any of my teams was more present on those three levels ever in my whole life, ever. There was never a kid in basketball, football, baseball that I played with who could tell you. And it's cool because I got, you know, social media allows me to connect with people from 40 years ago. From every, you know, I moved around a lot. So I've been overseas. I've been, you know, in the U.S., all over. And people at almost every stop will ping me. And any of them who watch this can attest to this. There is not one person I played with at any level of my life that could tell you that they were more present physically, I'm sorry, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, more than me. So I always knew that was a huge part of success, number one. Number two, I always knew at some level that most people, most athletes don't have or know how to tap into that. And so as a trainer, if you can't elicit that from athletes, you can't coach them. So what I learned as I was doing all this coaching and training before I knew I wasn't a trainer is I began to realize that part of it. And what happened was, so that was from 97 to about 2002 when I had my daughter, our first child. So I was in a predicament and I had gone back to school to get my master's degree, primarily to be able to have more credibility to our company, to be able to go out and raise money, because I was flying around the country. I was trying to raise money in a time where seemingly everybody was getting money for any business plan written on a napkin was getting $25 million, $10 million. Jeez. And yet we had a sound plan, which has been proven, because now all kinds of companies do what we thought about 25 years ago. But we were getting hit with no's and no's and no's. And I thought, some of it was naive, some of it I believe was true, but part of why we weren't getting funded was because we were five minority young former athletes that had just finished playing football. So we were all in our mid-20s, all of us, 25, 24 years old. And we're flying around. I'm flying around usually solo because you can't afford to, you know, send more of us. And we were getting no's, right? So I went back to school to get a master's degree, MBA, to add credibility to our leadership board. And in the midst of that, I got married, had our first child, and just by the way that life works sometimes, I ended up pivoting my life and going into finance, like corporate finance. So I left the training completely. We disbanded our company, and we just decided to work, all of us. So I went to finance. I was a chief financial officer for a decade for two companies. But it would come full circle because in 2013, after my last company was purchased, the last company I was at as a CFO, I was burnt out from working. And by then, the beauty of how things work, by then I was older, right? I was in my 40s, almost 40, about 40. I had done a lot by then. I had trained for a while. I had done finance for a while. I was married, had two young children. So I began my last piece of the puzzle, if you will, in terms of where I'm at now. And so I began a fitness business, where I had a boot camp, a bricks and mortar boot camp. I recently morphed that into an online program. Still doing training of sports teams, but that really gave me reps in terms of coaching, storytelling, writing, putting together like plans in terms of not just physical plans, but mental, psychological, spiritual plans and programs that now I teach people to implement in their lives. So now I do. So now I'm. This is my last pivot, I think, where now I'm a greatness coach, I call myself. And even though I still train people and I still do, you know, fitness things, my primary gift is utilizing all of those to teach people how to figure out who they are, what they're meant to do in their life, in the current window of their life. Because we have many things we're meant to do, I believe. Mm-hmm. We have an ultimate, but on that journey, you have windows of things you're meant to do that teach you something for the next thing. So whatever, wherever you are in your life, whatever your window is, my gift is teaching people how to extrapolate and get out of yourself the greatness that's inside of you to fulfill your highest level at where you're at, and then move on. So that was long-winded, but that's kind of...
Dang, that is very interesting. I want to go back to the three... No, it's not the three E's, but it's... That's one of them, but it's emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. I think I see a lot of one person being strong in one area, you know?
Oh, yes, yes.
And then the session still will feel a little off. Like, do we need to talk something out before you keep running your reps? So what's the difference between the three of those? And how do you kind of like get your clues to check in on a client or a teammate to see how they're doing?
Right. So that's a great question. It is a evolving concept, right? So there's no checklist where, you see a kid or an adult and you say, okay, they're lacking here, they're lacking there. It's a nuanced evaluation that's always going on, right? And what I mean in terms of emotional, spiritual, psychological is that I provide tools throughout, right? Through story, through anecdotes, through Coach Bobby's lessons, Coach Bobby's. I have all these acronyms and these different bullet points and things that are mnemonic devices. I remember what Coach Bobby said. He said three E's, so he said this. That allow you to work on those areas so that when you get to the mat or the football field or the basketball court, you are as engaged in those three areas as possible. Right. So, for example, I'll go through each one really quickly. So emotionally, right, that means that it's not that you are addressing your emotions outside of the mat. Right. That's part of it. But it's more about how you are feeling about your pursuit in this journey. Right. Because I don't believe in doing anything half, but I won't say curse words. But right, I don't believe in it. I believe if you're doing something, it's a reflection of who you are. Number one, if you're doing something, you're doing it for a reason, right? So you go to work, you know, to earn a living, to support yourself and your mate and your children, right? Or you go to jiu-jitsu to become more physically fit, to be more confident, to be able to defend yourself. Whatever it is, you play football because you want to go to a high level at something that you believe God put into you, right? You want to build bonsai trees. You want to plant. You want to be a farmer. We don't do these things accidentally, right? You don't move to the U.S. from wherever it is accidentally. You do it for a reason. So if the reason is there, then you must honor the reason.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you don't do that, then you feel a certain way about it, naturally. Right. So when you feel bored or you feel disappointed or you feel depressed, it's not because of this external thing. It's because at the end of the day, you understand there's some strife and some friction going on and conflict in your soul that's creating an emotional fight between what you are and what you're supposed to be. So I give all these stories, lessons. I say, you have to sit down with yourself every morning when you wake up and ask that person inside of you, what do you need from me? And when you don't answer the question affirmatively, you have emotional distress, right? You're distressed emotionally. So now whatever you feel externally can allow you to express that, you'll tag that as the reason. Mm-hmm. Right? My girl and I had a fight. My boss got mad at me. My cousin is not feeling well. So you look, but at the end of the day, you understand that you're not doing what you need to do internally to be the best person. Because when those things happen to you and you are doing your inner work, they're not as bad. And you almost never frame that as the emotion that it is. My mom passed away when I was 28. Right? So I understand, 26 actually. Hmm. So I get that could have been an emotional thing that impacted how I went to work, how I worked out. But because I was always the best version of me as a son to her in her time in the hospital, when she passed away, the emotion was sadness, of course. But it wasn't, I didn't bring that with me because all that I was doing in my life, I was still the best version of me. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, when you're not addressing that question that you must ask yourself, you're emotionally empty or not full, right? That's the emotion part. Psychologically, it's similar but different. So when you are not giving your brain, so we are creatures, right? That I study, this is a great segue. So I learned about 5, 6, 7 years ago. And when something comes to me, I write it down. So I have notes here, guys. Mm-hmm. Or I do a video really quickly on my phone. And later on, I'll either talk about it, write about it, or think more about it. But one thing that came to me was I told my class or I told a video audience, I said, the problem with fitness, and that's the easiest because everyone gets right. fitness at some level. And I always try to start there and then extrapolate to life and business and family and all those things, right? The problem with fitness is we focus on the wrong sciences, right? So people ask me, oh, Coach Bobby, how you get arms like that? What exercises do you do? And I'm like, I do bicep exercises. Mm-hmm. What kind though? They all work if you do them enough, right? Jiu-jitsu is probably similar, right? Where, sure, there are some coaches that are better, of course. There are some movements that are more challenging, of course. But the ones who are great are the ones who have just done it, mm-hmm. who have honored the journey, right? So when I say wrong sciences, we are all caught up in the chemistry, the anatomy, the biology, the kinesiology of fitness, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like what diet do you do? You know, do you do keto? Do you fast? You know, do you do, what's your split in your workouts? What movements do you do? Those are all important, but not as important as sociology, as sociology and psychology.
Yes.
Right? So that I don't care so what true. I give you, right? If you hang out with people who don't want to be great, you won't be great. Like the ones you know who are great in your field, in medicine, in jiu-jitsu, in football, their sociology is people and environments that nurture their dream, right? Mm-hmm. Their psychology is such that they don't spend all kinds of time allowing messaging from the external world that disrupts their chase, period. That's just how it works. Like people who are great don't spend a lot of time listening and watching negative stuff. They just don't. So psychology means that when you come to the mat or the football field or to work, what have you been doing? Bless you.
Thank you.
What have you been doing in terms of psychology that allow you to be in the right time, in the right mindset here? Mm-hmm. Like all these things, discipline, mindset, motivation, those are all made up words. At the end of the day, is you are a creature of habit. You are a creature, right? In the kingdom of the world, right? Every animal in the kingdom of the whole world is driven by procreation and survival. All of us. Cats, dogs, lions, cheetahs, human beings. Procreation and survival. Now we're smart, our brains have evolved. So we create these things. We create microphones, we create podcasts, we create desks, we create football, we create all these things. We create it because mm-hmm. our mind has evolved beyond monkeys and tigers and whatever. But we're still driven by the same things, survival and procreation. So when we get our psychology so messed up that it doesn't know what's going to make us survive or what's going to make us procreate, then we create all this doubt and this ambiguity in our natural inclinations that we can't produce on the mat,
yeah.
on the football field. So when you eliminate those things and you're so restricted in the things you allow your body, mind, spirit to focus on, your psychology becomes clean, right? You're not thinking about 45 different things. You're not thinking about a million things. I tell my kids all the time, when you allow your brain to continue doing this, right, you've trained it to not be able to focus on this skill you're developing in football practice or this problem you're learning in algebra class. So cleaning up your psychology barriers allow you to have a psychology in your mind that is present when you're in the moment. So that's what I mean. So you can't fix that on the mat, mm-hmm. but you can tell them, look, it looks like when you come here, you're still distracted. So what's going on, right? That's how you address it. And then you give them tools to go home and in between the workouts, be able to clean up their brain filters. And so they can have a more in-tuned workout or session when they're with you. And then the last one is spiritual. And that might be the most important for me. It's not religious, although it can be. It's about like tying together everything that is beyond the football field, the mat, the classroom, the boardroom, the relationship. So you're reaching beyond that to figure out what it all means, mm-hmm. right? So it's hard to do a workout session when it's only about you.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard to do a football practice when it's only about you. It's hard to chase any dream or vision. It's hard to come here, right? It's hard to come here and you know, rush over here to do a podcast when it's all about me, right? So what I teach people that you have to figure out, like, what's the essence of who you are?
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a few layers that could be several podcast episodes if we had to, but it's figuring out, okay, you know, I always go back to I love using ancestry as a motivator to tap into your spirit. And in fitness, it's easy. Burpees is like the thing everyone hates.
Yep.
Everyone hates burpees. And for a reason, because it's hard, right? And it makes you give more effort than you probably want to, right? Especially if you're doing a good burpee. One that's good for you. One that's good at the cusp of what your comfort is. But I tell people who face that internal voice, and we all face it, right? I mean, there's everyone great faces those moments in your chase where it's like, man, I kind of want to give up. I want to stop studying. I want to stop. You know, I want to get off the mat. I'm tired of getting slammed. I can't get this mm-hmm. thing right. I want to stop training for football, whatever it is. And it's that moment where you have to go beyond that to grow muscle, to grow mental toughness, all those things. And I tell people that I want you to think about what your ancestors had to do.
Dang.
To get here. Mm-hmm. To get you here. Think about it. I mean, if you're in America, anybody in America, if you go back at most, Hannah, at most three generations, maybe four, that generation of your family came here with nothing. Mm-hmm. Probably had to endure some crazy stuff, right? African Americans for sure, Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders. They came here, had to live in modest means, to say the least.
Yep.
Had to endure, you know, ridicule and racism and all kinds of things. Had to forego eating, probably had to share resources with multiple families, possibly. And you can't do a burpee? Like, for real? You can't study for another hour when your parents literally had to, like, starve for days so you could eat? Mm-hmm. And so it's a matter of tapping into, okay, so it is in you, right? So doing a burpee is in you. In fact, if somebody came in here right now with the AK-47, you would be able to sprint, right? You're tired and you say I can't do anymore. But if somebody came in here right now and threatened your life, or I tell moms, if someone grabbed your child right now at a park and you had to go chase them, I promise you, you could go chase them. So it's in us. And so the ones who are great, not only on the long haul, but in the moment, like the ones who are great in that hour session you have them on the mat or in that practice, are the ones who in that moment can tap into the spirit of their ancestors, of whatever they believe in their religion or their God, and say, there's more in me. I ain't gonna die. And if you believe in, you know, if you're a Christian like I am, you mean to tell me that Jesus could get on a cross and go through all that and say, forgive them, for they know not what they do, and you can't do one more sprint? Hmm. Are you kidding me? So, as you see, I can still do it. I still have the ability to say, you full of crap, Coach Bobby. Like, for real? Like, you scared to go on stage? You wanted to be in front of 10,000 people. Now they're here. Now you gonna run and tuck? When your mom and dad went through this and that? So, by spirit, I mean that. Hmm. I mean going beyond, like, what the world and what physical dimensions and physical laws tell you is possible, and tap into that thing no one can see. Like, when a mom, her baby's under a car, there's no way this woman should be able to lift a car up. But she will. Like, that ain't from psychology. That ain't from emotional. That ain't from physical. That's from pure spirit of being a mom whose baby can't get up under a car. Mm-hmm. So it's about, as a coach, it's about recognizing in every session, like, what's going on here. And then being able to give them the tools, not necessarily to fix that practice or that session, but to teach them that, look, this is what you have to do, so that when we come back the next time and the next time, that we're able to do better, because this is what you need to do. And then you address that for the next practice or the next session.
Hmm. Dang.
It's long-winded, I'm sorry.
No, that was beautiful. And it, especially how you, the last one is spirit.
Right.
And I've been really, like, navigating with this whole principle, because spirituality is, like, the foundation of growth, really. But different communities kind of taint the word and just, like, connect with the earth and connect with nature.
Right, right.
I come from a Christian background. Christian, my dad was Catholic here and there. So, like, I'd go to both.
Right.
Then I made my faith just an all-in thing.
Right.
And then it was, like, a little bit of a pullback, because I didn't want my Christian soft-heartedness to be taken advantage of. And for a season, people would slander people, and that would just start to piss me off. And eventually I'm like, all right, the kindness in my heart wants to forgive you,
right,
but someone needs to protect, or just self-respect and protect myself. And so it's like stepping away from my faith was because I felt like I couldn't be strong in my spirit sense. But now, as I'm like, dang, like, God is the power force that we all need, that explains the inexplainable, but it's strong. It's powerful. It's remembering that which came before us and like those inexpressible things taking over. It's not soft. It's not weakness. No. And that's where I'm like shifting my mind. Like those that have God on their side are the most unstoppable.
Right. And I'm so glad you said that, because on the way here, I had to like check myself, because, you know, it's so hard when you're trying to be the best version, right? And I'm 50. I'll be 51 this year. So my runway is shorter than what's behind me, right? Which is hard. It's hard then to accept, right? Mm. But the years ahead of me is probably fewer than the ones behind me. And so when you have that, you're so driven to keep going that you tend to forget all the things that God's given you. Mm-hmm. And so I made a point at the beginning of this off season, a few weeks ago, that whenever I got on the field, I would not touch my foot to the grass until I just said a prayer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do it for everybody to see, you know, I'm doing this, you know, but I want to make sure that this is my son and I's last season together as coach and son mm-hmm. on a high school team. I might go with him to college and try to be his coach there with me.
Do it. I mean,
but I made a point to tell myself that you can do things that many dads wish they could do. Mm-hmm. I mean, to have a son that could play high school football, who's good enough to play, and to have the skill sets to be able to coach him and have a team that wants you to coach on that team, is a lot of dots had to be, you know, aligned for that to work. So I made a point to make sure that before I touched the grass, I was going to say a prayer and be thankful. But I forgot. I did two in a row and I forgot. So I was mad. I was like, Coach Bobby, I have to do that, man, when you got to get back to doing that. But it's what's so cool about it is that it is a powerful thing. Like, when you understand, like whose you are, I would say, when you understand whose you are, then who you are is easy. Like, once you understand like who you belong to, like who you came from, it's easy. And it becomes then how you use it. And how you use it is the part that softens and humbles you. But it should never change the amount of power you show the world, right? So in my case, and it's the same as you, I follow you on social media, it's the same as you. Like, we not only should not be afraid to show our powerful sides, in many ways, we're designed to do that. Like, there are many, many followers of Christ who are docile and kind and quiet by nature. God designed them that way. So they deliver a message that was designed to be delivered in a way that God designed it. We ain't that. I'm not that.
Yeah.
So I stopped apologizing for who I am and how I look years ago. Now I'm still working out like how that looks in terms of delivering my message to everybody, right? I talk to kids, I talk to correctional facilities, and I can't be the same exact person every time, but it's gonna be a variation of this. Of me being passionate, of me yelling, of me, you know, wearing muscle shirts. That's just who I am. God designed me that way. So what's beautiful, what I'm seeing from that, is there is a segment of the world that needs that. Like, there are people, there are young athletes, especially young minority athletes, that won't resonate with some quiet, calm, articulate, mm-hmm. soft-spoken former priest or yeah. current priest. Right? But when Coach Bobby steps up there, I get automatic credibility. Now when I add the level of my belief in God and what he's done for me, now that kid might read the Bible. Mm-hmm. Where another person could never have gotten that kid to read the Bible. So, so I lean fully into it now. You know, I got my active faith gear on right now. This is the pray, train, conquer, repeat. They're gonna be a sponsor soon, by the way.
Yes,
Active Faith. They're gonna be a sponsor soon. That's amazing. You don't know it yet, but yeah. So I, and will you curse Coach Bobby? I know I curse. I'm not perfect. But there are kids that I curse to that come to God because of me. So, you know, I'm a work in progress, but like you mentioned, you know, I fully lean into my connection with God, because I understand all this is because of Him. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to where I am because of Him. I have all my flaws because of Him, because they humble me. And I have an assignment. And I'll be dang if I'll let somebody else's assignment, get in the way of what was assigned to me. Yeah. to change people's lives.
Have you gotten a lot of negative feedback?
About my spirituality?
No, about the way you carry yourself.
Yes.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
So my wife is gonna watch this, mm-hmm. and she's so fearful, because I'm abrasive, I always say, you need some creamer with my coffee. You can't take it's mm-hmm. It needs some diluting, but I'm also very introspective and self-reflective. So I know this, and I teach this, and I speak about it. We all have two sides to us, all of us. Mm-hmm. All of us. We have this side that's driven by strength and conquering and overcoming. And we have one side that wants to connect, that's loving, that wants a mate, that wants to be light, mm-hmm. that's sensitive. Most of us lean on one of those sides our whole lives.
Yeah.
So you see somebody, oh, she's quiet. Well, she's leaning into her quiet side. She has another side to her, but she don't show it. And you see a guy who's like, he's a jerk. He's a bully. Well, he's leaned fully into his power side, right? And so for me, I grew up kind of living both, where I lived, I haven't even mentioned this. I normally mention it quickly in my talks, but I grew up with a stutter. Mm. So I talk fast now because I grew up with a stutter. So it's called cluttering. But because of that, I was always like a shy, introverted kid. But I liked sports. I liked to be active. So that was part of my world too. But I always gravitated toward the kids who were kind of nerdy, right? But then in my sports world, I would have kids that were cool, like my son who's here. but outside of sports, I wouldn't hang out with them typically. So I was always in this conflicted world. So you fast forward a few years, and then I become better at football. I start to work out. I get attention from the opposite sex. Guys started to like admire me for my muscles. Mm-hmm. And I leaned fully into the tough side. And in my defense, as you grow and you elicit positive responses based on any of your personalities, you tend to lean to that personality. Hmm. Right? If you're sweet and kind and everyone gives you praise and follows you and loves you, you will lean more into that. If you had been admonished by people and disliked and not attractive to the opposite sex, and all of a sudden you start getting more attention, you will align that with whatever your new personality is. So I began to equate all my success with this bravado side to me, this tough side of me, with having muscles, with being loud. So that's my defense. But over time, you begin to understand that you can't be the full version of you unless you are the whole version of you. So I have begun in the last 10 years to understand that I'm not going to change what I think extrapolates greatness from people. I won't change that. I will always be passionate. I will always yell. And I yell at everybody. I yell at, my fitness kids, my 45-year-old moms, the 8-year-old kids I teach. I go into, the schools, K-12. I'm yelling. I'm passionate. I yell at my football team. But I know that when I'm off stage, when I'm away from practice, when I get to practice, there's an element to me that knows that, number one, I know who I am, and part of me still loves to love people. So I do that. Number two, I understand that when I do that, they get who I am and they accept the other part better. So to your question, people who see just one version of me, you know, parents sometimes they'll see just that version of me and they won't like it. You know, they'll say, you know, you don't need to curse at kids, or you don't need to, and they're right. You don't need to. I choose to. And I told parents, I choose to. You're right. I don't need to. But the guy who just hit him and knocked him out said worse to him, by the way. So I'm trying to get him ready.
Yeah.
Now I've changed my approach a little bit. But again, it's about understanding who you are and understanding that you have more nuances and layers to how that relationship evolves. And to my defense, on the other side, every parent or every teacher or every coach who's ever known me for long enough has always apologized in some way later. So even the ones who don't like it or give me negative feedback, the ones who stay around long enough, they get it. Oh, okay, coach. The kids love you, right? I don't know why, but they do. So I've begun to be less, because what happens is, what's bad about that is I'm not good at letting it go, right? I internalize all of it. So I would go home, and the story is I tell is that Coach, I would say, you know, Bobby cares about feelings, and Coach Bobby don't give a dang. Coach Bobby does not care about your feelings. But what happens is after I yell at you and make you cry, Hannah, which I won't probably because you're bad. but if I make you cry in our workout and Coach Bobby's like, I don't care, man. I'm trying to get her. But she told me she wants to be great. Like you told me you want to be great. I'm trying to get out of you. Mm-hmm. I'm yelling at him, you know. But when we leave that environment, now the regular Bobby comes back and I'm like, oh, man, that wasn't nice, man. So then I'll text Hannah and say, I'm sorry. Or I text my son. I'll go back to his room and I say, I'm sorry to him. So that part of me has gotten better in terms of understanding that I know where my heart is. So I don't need to beat myself up as much when I do stuff that's not perfect.
And it's what they need.
And they need it. We all need it.
Yeah.
And again, I get there's different approaches. But I am who I am. You know, there are people always say, you don't need to be a yelling coach. Like Tony Dungy doesn't yell. You know, there's several coaches that have a different demeanor. I said, you're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. But the guys I looked up to coaching, they just like me.
It's like, it's more of this like intense, tough love. Yeah. And it's like, how else could someone give you that much energy unless they cared for you?
Right.
Because growing up, that was the coaching style I saw seeing the wrestling world.
Right.
My dad was a wrestling coach and I see him yell
right.
at young people. And I'm like, if I were you, I would be bawling my eyes right. out. But then I see how they like keep showing up. And then just some fall out, some stay in. And the ones that stay in with that intensity, they just succeed. And it's like something about that belief. Like for you to get so in my face, it works. Coaches that haven't pushed me, that haven't been engaged in my life to that extent of intensity, it's like, it's like I can just stay out of your business because right. I don't want to inconvenience you. That energy. I thought it was too much until I grew out of my dad, you know?
Yeah.
Like having a father that's similar to you with intensity levels where making you cry during a workout is a form of love, where forcing you to train a bunch when you don't want to is a form of love. Like, it messes with your head. You're like, this is just so intense. Why am I crying? And then you grow out of it and you see that like we were supposed to be trained and conditioned to excel in the world. That's only going to exactly. get harder.
Right.
The pressure is just going to get financial and interesting. And then you just have to have control over the brain. And then life happens where you have to react. And the people that brought you to that breaking point in a safe environment like the field are the reasons why you excel in life.
Right. Right. And what's crazy about that is, so I want to write this down, but I don't want to seem rude. So there's a few points that reminded me of. Number one is our brains are trained to protect us. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's almost impossible unless you've trained your brain to be crazy. It's impossible to make yourself go beyond the point of extreme discomfort. it's extremely hard to do, mm-hmm. especially in the beginning of that pursuit. So having someone show you that this line is arbitrary and voluntary and imaginary until I prove it to you, hmm. right? So a coach's job is to tell you, show you that this line that you see is voluntary, imaginary. What if I said that third one was? That was good. I made it up just now. But so as a coach, I know you won't go beyond it on your own. Because you're, especially when you're early, you're a 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 year old football player, you're brand new in jiu-jitsu, you're new at our firm, our law firm, and so you think 60 hours is the most you can do. So it's my job to show you that you have the ability to go past that, because your brain's telling you to stop. So a boot camp instructor, which is where the word comes from in the military, his or her job is to make sure you understand this is not your limit. Because in two months, we're going to be in Vietnam or Korea or Iraq, and I'm going to need you to know that that was not your line to stop him. And right now, you don't know that. Right now, you're an 18-year-old recruit from California, and now you're in Fort Benning, Georgia. You have no idea what your limits are. So it's my job to show you. And like you said, when a coach does that for you, no one is going to be eye rolls. No one is going to be pushed back. Like my son, he's been rolling his eyes at me since he was 8 years old. Right? So like you said earlier, the willingness to deal with that over and over again as a coach or a parent is what makes you love them. Is what love is. Is I'm willing to deal with the discomfort that I have to put you through discomfort, knowing that on the back end of that is greatness. Because mm-hmm. the easy part is that, you know what, I don't feel like dealing with this today, man. Just do what you want to do. That's mm-hmm. easy to do. Right? Especially like in a job or as a trainer, I'm going to get paid anyway. So if you don't want to do a burpee, that's on you.
Yeah.
And there are days when I had that mentality. Like, you know what, you don't want me to coach you? All right. I'm already fit. You ain't bothering me. I'm going to have abs no matter what. So you told me you want to abs like me. So don't get mad at me. We go to the pool in 2 weeks. And your shirt's on and mine's off. Don't get mad at me and give me a hard time. So I say all the time, like, don't get mad at me. I'm ripped. But I had coaches growing up who told me that you got too much sprints in you. I don't. I can't do it. Okay. Ready, go. You know? Yeah. So it's important to understand that. And then what happens, like you said, is once a kid or an adult understands that you were willing to do that for them, and then they see what you did for them in terms of where they got in their career or in their body or in their sport, they'll never forget you. Hmm. They will never forget you. And the ones who had it easy and got through life because the coaches or the parents were more willing to be nice and be accepted, you'll see the difference. And they will see the difference, which is important. So that was on point.
Hmm. Dang. Can I ask you a question about a clip that I saw on Instagram?
Yes, uh-oh.
And I want to share because it spoke to me, especially with what I do and transitioning and being on and off. You talked about the analogy of Clark Kent, how you present yourself as one way.
Yep.
You are on and ready to go and you're classic good old people person, but it's hard to get out of that. And yeah. then be your normal self, which who you call it, like the Clark Kent state. Right. Who accepts you in this state? How do you even go there while being honest
yeah.
to the other side that shows? Because yeah. I'm learning how to balance it. Sometimes I feel like my closest friends get this crazy sporadic side, but not being too just down for whatever when it comes to helping people and right. having values and principles that influence each other, but also living it honestly.
No, that's so good. That's good.
What did you mean so, from that?
Sorry, I cut you off. So in that video, the context was more, I'll do both. The context was about vulnerability. Because again, we all have two sides. All of us do,
mm-hmm.
right? And those who are fully invested in their gift, right? Whatever it is. I mean, ours is communicating. Ours is physical prowess, right, in our fields. Ours is motivation, inspiration. But your gift could be, you know, selling homes or building homes, or it could be, you know, basket weaving, whatever it is. When we witness that in people, it's undeniable and noticeable and oftentimes extreme. Because the best of the best, they stand out for a reason. Whatever they're doing is extreme in that field, mm-hmm. right? Oh my gosh, she has a million followers and she does ceramics. Well, she's extreme in that field. That's her gift, but she's extreme in that field. When you do that, that's your Superman or Supergirl. That's your superhero. So when you know that you are both, and we all are, and everyone who has that side, I've spoken to many, many people I look up to, and people who follow me, they look up to. So I know this to be a fact. Everyone that you see as a superhero in their field has the other side to them. All of them. Every Superman you see or Supergirl has Clark Kent in them. We just never see it, right? So for them, the struggle is you know who you are, right? You know who you are. I know I'm Clark Kent for most of the day. I know I struggle with insecurities and I'm kind of shy and introverted for most of the day. But on stage, on a football field, in a workout, I'm coaching, in a classroom, I put my cape on. And I enjoy it because that's who I am. I was born on, what planet was he born on? Whatever planet it was. So I was born on that planet. So I have this innate ability to be great. So I got to do it. But I also know that outside of that, I'm like this nerdy 12-year-old stuttering kid. So it's hard for that person to go out and see people see them in that way, knowing that they're just a regular person most of the time. But when duty calls, oh my God, there's a cat in the trees, where's Superman? You put your cape on and you do what you're supposed to do. So that's one part of it. The other part that's hardest for me is at some point when you live that part of your life more engaged and more fully, the way we all should be trying to do, like we should be trying to be that part of us more times than not.
Yeah.
Like live to be the best version of you for as much as you can in your life. Like don't just save it for moments here and there. Like if it's in you, be that most of the time. But when you do that, most of the world gets to see that more times than not. Mm-hmm. Which means now, for me at least, I'm so fearful because many people who see me have only seen that part of me. So I become afraid for people to see that, which makes you more, for me at least, it makes me more withdrawn. Mm-hmm. So now there are people in my life who have seen Clark Kent. My wife, my boys from college, from UC Davis, my mom and dad, my sister, my brother. But most people who know me, they know me as Superman. And so I get really reluctant to go to parties, to just sit down casually and talk, because eventually I'm going to be revealed as the real person I am. And that scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. Like, it scares the hell out of me. So I'm working on it. So I'm working on being more vulnerable and showing myself in videos and in person, showing the Clark Kent side of me, because I have to. We all have to. Otherwise, we go through life being afraid of always being great, which is kind of weird. But yeah, that video was meant to say, look, you know, I want you guys all to embrace this unique greatness that you have inside of you. Like, you are a superhero. If you're watching this, you are a superhero, period, in something. So I want you to find that, and then I want you to live your life as a superhero. But I want you to not go so far and dive so deep into that personality and brand that you forget that you're also Clark Kent, mm-hmm. or Bruce Wayne or Peter Parker, and make sure you show people that so that you're not so afraid to be both sides. Because if that happens, then you are not the same version of you are as the superhero.
Yeah.
Because you've denied the other part of you that is as important to who you are as anything. And there's no superhero series if you don't have both of those dichotomies. There's a reason they do that. Because we're all like that. And so we can't relate to superheroes if we only see the superhero part. We have to see the other part. So we as people have to understand and appreciate and accept that we too have that side that we need to show to the world.
Mm, that's really cool. I like that.
Makes sense?
Mm-hmm. How do you fight the, maybe you've dealt with that a while ago, but as an expressor, as a communicator, how do you fight the insecurities that of maybe someone's not thinking like that? Like, if you think like how we think, yeah, your mind doesn't stop. You right. can turn on the camera, and right. I have so many videos of me saying something, and I'm like, I feel so good to let it out, but I don't think anyone's mind is here, so I'm not gonna share that.
Yes.
Or like yeah. knowing that you're like a lot. You're a lot of energy. You have a lot of intensity. Maybe someone doesn't need to be encouraged today or hear this message. Like, how do you determine what is ready for people to hear?
That's a great question. I think as long as you do what I just said and be intimate and honorable to both sides of yourself, mm-hmm. right? If you internally allow yourself to be both, again, we all are both, right? So in our cases, we can tend to project an energy that is not always needed, like you just said, right? Like, man, Coach Bobby, he's on one again. Like, can you turn it down, right? So if we are always in tune with who we are, both sides of the coin, mm-hmm. and then we are brave enough to show both sides, then nothing's off limits. Nothing. Mm. Right? So during COVID and during the George Foreman stuff, George Foreman's a boxer. George Floyd stuff, Colin Kaepernick kneeling, I had some emotions and I had the same feeling, like, should I go on there and say this? People are going to be offended. Mm. But I did it. I went live or I did a video, I posted it and I had some negative feedback, right? But I also went back the next day or a couple of days later and just talked about, being vulnerable mm-hmm. and not having the answers. And not knowing the right path to take, but just speaking like, look, all I can say is how I feel.
Yeah.
All I can say is what I see. All I can say is what, as a black man, what I experience. Am I wrong sometimes? Of course. But I think when you do that, then the audience lives with you, like they're in a relationship with you, and just like your friends can do stuff that people you just meet can't do, right? Like, you can lose it. Oh my God, Hannah, you see her today? She's being a B word, right? but they know you, right? Yeah. They know, they've seen enough good stuff with you, right? So they deal with it. Mm-hmm. So as long as you are able to do that and you have the intent of building a long-term relationship, then again, nothing's off limits, I don't think, because you're in it for the long time, mm-hmm. and for the long haul. Now, if you pop on once a month and you're just yelling or mm-hmm. talking about some topic that's controversial, then you're going to spark a lot of controversy and hatred and all that stuff. But if you are honest and you get on there and you just speak your truth, which I hate hearing, I'm speaking my truth. It's just kind of a buzzword for just I'm being a jerk. So just deal yeah. with it. But if you are growing with the audience, then they'll grow with you mm-hmm. and they'll allow you to have missteps. So I just try to do that. I just try to, I try not to filter myself. And because there are many videos where I stuttered or talked fast or said something stupid, uh-huh. there's enough out there for me to be humble mm-hmm. and for them to see that, look, man, this video is pretty good. I'm fire on this video. But there's plenty that I wasn't, so I'm not perfect. if you do that over time, they trust you, they believe in you, and they'll follow you, and they'll allow you some grace when you say or do things that are either above or below their energy levels. Like, because a lot of times, till now, you know, my biggest fear is that, like, people are like, man, I want you to just motivate me. I don't want you to preach. That's fine.
What's the difference?
I got enough videos that you can watch that, you know, they think that if you're talking about things that are beyond just the hoorah, you know, the hoorah, rah, rah, rah stuff, then you're preaching. And I'm like, it's the same. It goes back to, like, what do you come to the mat with? Mm-hmm. Psychology, emotion, spirit, right? The rah-rah stuff addresses the moment you're in, but I want to make sure you get there with the right three-pronged attack. So you're going to hear some preaching from me, mm-hmm. or some teaching, because that's what, right? That's why I can do the workout right now. Like, I'm cheerleading for you right now, because in the moment, it's going to help you do one more burpee. But I'm trying to get to the point where when you come to the mat next time, my cheering will help you do five more burpees, mm-hmm. right? So the rah-rah stuff is just, you know, I use the analogy of a fireplace, right? Or a fire. Like, that's just kindling. That's just immediate. I'm trying to get a log on there that will last, mm-hmm. that you can walk away and go to sleep and the fire is still going. So the preaching or the teaching is that log that's going to make you lay in bed and go, oh, what was he saying? Yeah, he was saying that. Okay, so tomorrow I'm going to get there ready. Mm-hmm. You know, I want you to think about things I say, you know, my stories, my analogies. Yeah. I want those to be in your subconscious and your mind in between your sessions on the football field or the mat or at work, so that when you get to the session, it's 1% better this time, 1% better this time. And that's going to accumulate over time. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to be the best person in the world at getting you ready for that endeavor. Like, the coaching, the training part of it, I'm good at it, but I want to be the person that does this part better than anyone in the world. I'm getting you ready for that hour or 2 hours that you're in your element.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sport of choice?
Football.
Football's your thing.
Yeah. Play football in college. That's what I coach. That's my first passion. I like football. I like basketball too. I wish I had gotten to martial arts, but I didn't. But yeah, so I love I would love to train for jiu-jitsu or martial arts or MMA.
I'm not sure I'm going to.
I'm not sure I want to compete, though.
Yes, competing's crazy.
I would definitely love to train. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
Yeah. It's like similar, obviously similar energy, especially once you realize a lot of it roots in the mind.
Yeah.
But with more football, it's more like explosive exercises.
Right.
Same with wrestling, it's explosive.
It's both, though, because it's endurance, because it's a long time, and it's explosive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, football is very, like, wide,
because
they also have, like, the guys that just lift.
Right.
Whereas, like, I'm learning with jiu-jitsu and boxing, that you have to learn how to be light on your feet.
Right.
Which is kind of reverse when you've been strength training, so,
right.
like, the bottom of my feet are always hurting now from, right. like, being toe-heavy.
Toes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I like about combat sports is it taps into a primal aspect, mm-hmm. that we all have, that we've lost, right? We've lost the primal. There's no more primal needs. You don't have to go hunt, mm-hmm. for your food. You don't have to gather. You don't have to build your house. You don't have to survive storms. You know, most of the world doesn't. There are parts that do. You don't need to defend against another village. Mm-hmm. So that part of our DNA is not tapped into enough, and especially for a male, like, I think it's important for you to have to fight sometimes, mm-hmm. not necessarily literally, but sometimes literally is the only way that you can remind yourself you have fight in you, mm-hmm. right? Fight for your career, fight for your relationship, fight for, you know your beliefs in the social, whatever it is, right? Sometimes the only way to remind yourself is to be in a physical fight, you know, where you have to literally defend yourself. So I think martial arts and combat sports give you that avenue to train in that way. And then even when you compete, you know, you're not going to die you could, but you're not meant to die, but you are meant to get to the point where I might die. So it just taps into a different part of you that I believe can help you, or will help, does help you in every part of your life. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do. I would do it just to be like, oh my God, just to get the goosebumps and be pushed to a limit, you know, again, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, mm-hmm. that nothing can push you to. That's why I love playing football, because it's one of the, you know, outside of combat sports, it's one of the last Greek mythical type mm-hmm. sports.
Yeah.
You know, it's just your 11 against their 11. You're inside some coliseum, and you just, people are watching you, and there's parts when you want to quit and parts when you want to, you know, give up. And it just tests you in a lot of ways that you can't replicate mm-hmm. outside of our sports, right?
Yeah.
So
testing limits. That's like the best thing about sports. Seeing the transformation process in a young person go from boy to man, or just weak to strong. It's the most beautiful thing. Like, if anything could guide you through that, it just so happens sports is like that perfect system.
Oh yeah, it's the perfect replica. Mm-hmm. And if we're being honest, Hannah, nothing outside of a physical sport, I believe, in terms of your own physical question marks, like running can do that for you, right? Because I'm like, can mm-hmm. I do this marathon? So yes, there are things that can do that internally, but to combine that with another opponent that's pressing against you, so internal strife and conflict mixed with external produces an element of growth inside of you that you can't get anywhere else. Hmm. Right? And Aquarius, I think, as I know, we did videos way back when. He says, film me. And one of the videos we did, the very first one, and he still says it to me, you know, I'm teaching you guys how to lift real life weights. Mm-hmm. Like right now it's a barbell, but one day you're gonna get a call from somebody, or one day you're gonna go through a divorce, one day you're gonna go through a bankruptcy. You know, those are real weights in life that this box that we're in right now mimics your mental toughness to deal with real life stuff. I know it sounds like, oh, that's a stretch. It's not a stretch, because your ability to deal with stuff can only be practiced when you have to deal with stuff.
Yes.
I would say, you know, the muscle, the I'm not gonna quit muscle, right? The I won't give up muscle can only be worked in moments you wanna give up. And if you don't put yourself in those moments, somehow, some way, when it really happens to you, you're not ready. Mm-hmm. And what better way, what easier way to do it than a physical sport like combat sports, wrestling, boxing, football. Those are probably the closest, wrestling, because it forces you literally to deal with that. I want to give up. I'm going to tap. No, I'm not tapping mm-hmm. yet. Am I going to throw the towel in? Not yet. Am I going to? So now when something happens to you, your brain understands and your spirit understands that I've gone through stuff. You know, I mean, I've gone through stuff already. So you're right. It's a perfect replica to what life will inevitably throw at you. Mm-hmm.
I'm asking this question for someone who I talked to about this. He wants to make wrestling state champ. Mm-hmm. And he just is new to wrestling. He got introduced to it through jiu-jitsu and was like in love with MMA, but he's in high school, so he has that chance to do that. And in my eyes, trust your coach. It looks like you're at a good wrestling environment to succeed. But what would you want to tell him to have a mind that's ready for the intensity to come for training for that?
Yeah, so I'll go over this quickly because probably time's getting limited. You know, I can mm-hmm. go forever. So I have these 5 steps to greatness that I teach. So my core curriculum, wherever I go, whether it's a talk, whether it's a workshop, my student-athlete symposiums, there's these 5 steps to greatness. And so it's want. You have to want it at every fiber of your being. 2, you have to believe it's possible. 3, you have to have practices and habits around movement. So it's called go. You have to get used to going. It's like, don't wait around for everything to be perfect. Get the right coach, the right diet, the right, you know, book, the right teacher. Just do something every moment, every day that you can. And then learn as you go. That's 4. Learn. And then five is persistence, like developing habits, and gaining resources that help you persist. All those things have a few things in common, and one of them, the most important one, is our days are limited, right? Number one, we all have 280 hours, I think it is, in a week. Is that right? 240. 68 hours, six, whatever number it is. of which, it's eight of us sleep per day, right? Some of it is an obligation, so either work or school per mm-hmm. day. And then you have whatever time you spend in direct work or practice of your endeavor. So for a sport, you practice for 2 hours a day. If you're aggressive, maybe 2.5. If you combine the weightlifting, you know, the running, and the on the mat, on the field, on the court practice, an aggressive number for all 7 days is 2.5 hours. That's a lot probably for most people, but let's say 2.5 hours. The growth that most people who are great see is gained in that sliver of time that remains, right? So if you're a wrestler, right? Everyone sleeps mm-hmm. 7 hours a day, whatever it is. All the kids is competing against go to high school, go to school, same hours. Some have AP classes, some have tutors, some might do more work or less, but it's roughly the same hours spent. Most of them train the same amount of time on the mat. Mm-hmm. It isn't much different, right? So what's the difference, Coach Bobby? What you do in the spare time, right? And it's as simple as this. You have to live as whatever you want to be for as much of those hours that remain as possible. Mm-hmm. What that means is, what are you watching? What are you reading? What are you listening to? What are you eating? Who are you hanging out with? What are you visualizing? Mm-hmm. How do you feel? What's your energy level? All those things can be addressed and need to be addressed and answered in the affirmative in terms of this thing is taking me closer to my dream than not. How you handle those hours determines your greatness. Mm-hmm. So for me, like today, I'm driving to UC Davis for a camp. That time could be spent doing a lot of things. Listening to music, on a phone call with somebody, talking trash, talking junk, watching something on the phone as I'm driving. Or I could spend it with an audio tape, audio book. You know, watching a speaker I like, mm-hmm. or listen to a speaker I like. So those 2 hours are the same 2 hours for any speaker who's taking his son to a football camp. The speaker in that group that ends up better after those 2 hours would have spent those 2 hours being a speaker. Right? Coach Bobby is going to be a speaker for the next 2 hours. Coach John Smith is going to be a viewer or listener of a football game or of music for those 2 hours. Hmm. So if I'm able to do more of those things and accumulate more time off task as a speaker or a greatness coach, then everyone I'm competing against will make me better. Because they're all doing this. They're all doing podcasts. They're all writing notes about their talk. They're all doing those things. So what are we doing in between? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I tell my kids who I coach and train, like, if you spend less time, you know, swiping and more time stretching or more time sleeping or more time watching videotape of yourself or people you admire, like videotape, not 10-second TikTok videos, like a real, you know, informative instructional video of how does this person box or how does this person do this move. Those things add up. Not only do they add up in terms of time on task and getting better at your craft, but they add up in your spirit. So now you're walking around with an energy level. This is deeper for everybody we're not there yet, but maybe a different episode. We'll get into like law of attraction. But when you are resonating at a level Well, you're telling the universe, this is who I am now. This I am a state wrestler, state champion. I am a UFC champ. I am a boxer at the national level, whatever it is. When you walk around and you prove to the universe that you're doing the things that prove that, and you resonate at that energy level, then things happen to you and for you automatically. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, a guy moves here who was a state champion 2 years ago who wants to train you. Now all of a sudden, this move that you couldn't get, all of a sudden, you figure it out. And all of a sudden, you're cutting weight a lot easier than you did before. All these things happen naturally when you begin to, again, fill those hours up with activities, physical and mental activities, that are aligned with your vision. And fewer of those moments align with just fun or play or leisure or whatever it is. There's nothing wrong with those things, but the ones who are great spend less time doing things that are not in alignment with who they want to be.
Hmm. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. We'll close it there. I'll leave you with one last question. Mantra or message for how someone can elevate their life
today? A mantra or message?
Mantra or message
to elevate. All kind of mantras. So my saying is better than yesterday. And I'll send you the so Aquarius Wave actually sung rapped my theme song.
Whoa. Have you heard it? No.
Yes, years ago. So I'll send that to you. It's called Better Than Yesterday. So BTY is my mantra. But that's old. So a more elongated mantra or I guess this is a little phrase is we have no right to be average, right? And that sounds direct, and it's meant to. Our parents, our grandparents, our ancestors have gone through too much. Our religious figures, for us as Jesus Christ, went through too much. The people who were meant to serve need us too much. Mm-hmm. We have no right to be average and selfish. Right, so the mantra is we have no right to be average because we don't. You know, my kids deserve to have nice things, right? My wife deserves to have nice things, right? The kids who don't have me as a dad, right? Who stumble upon my YouTube page or go to one of my seminars, they deserve to have the same lessons my son has. So I have no right to be afraid, to be lazy, to be reluctant for whatever reason, to extrapolate all that I have from my gift. I have no right to do that. I owe it to my ancestors. My mom's passed away, my dad's still here. I owe it to my brother and sister who have my shared name, last name. I owe it to my children and my wife. And I owe it to everybody out there who has their own gift, who sees me as a role model to figure out what they're supposed to do. Hmm. So you, me, the viewers, we have no right to be average.
Mm-hmm. Dang, powerful. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Even for just choosing to do this for the long run. And it's crazy because you're on my podcast, but you've impacted my main coach, jiu-jitsu boxing, from 15 years ago.
20.
Really?
By 20.
Freak.
Maybe 20.
Yeah, a long time ago. And it's like, I already know your coaching style because you left an imprint on my coach. And like that ripple effect is happening because of what you choose to do. And I know that there's a sacrifice to do what you do and the hard work. So I just want to say thank you for being someone that my generation and younger has someone to aspire to be like, you know, and I know you're going to continue to carry the torch and provide a path that people like me can take.
Thank you.
Does that even look like, you know? So very thankful for what you do.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Appreciate
have a lovely time with your son, UC Davis.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys. Keep elevating. Find him on Instagram. What's your Instagram?
At Coach Bobby Bluford. At Coach Bobby, I'll pop up. It's the guy shirtless with his. Yeah, the guy showed it. So at Coach Bobby Bluford on Instagram, my Facebook page, and YouTube.
All right. Well, guys, thank you. This is Coach Bobby Bluford. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.